And today we're going to talk about Avesta. But before we get there, and that is not a person from the Mediterranean, we're going to talk a little bit about this deification of Zoroaster. We have already spoken about this like almost two full weeks ago. But another quote from the Ante-Nicene Fathers. That word ante there, A-N-T-E. What is that? And if you say your mother's sister, I'm going to throw something at you. All right? Before, yes. A-N-T-E means before, okay? And the same in the 10th book of the Republic mentions Eros. Who wrote the Republic?
Plato.
Okay. But who was Plato's student? Come on, Zach.
No.
Don't you remember the acronym from last year? How about you? SPA. Can't you remember the acronym?
Aristotle.
Yeah, that's right.
I try to remember the acronym.
Yeah. Socrates taught Plato, who taught Aristotle. SPA. That's how I remember it was. Huh? All right, so, in the same in the 10th book of the Republic, Plato mentions Eros, the son of Arminius, who is Zoroaster. I mean, everyone seems to be Zoroaster. You're going to find out there's lots of names for this guy. No one knows exactly when he lived or exactly where he came from. But everyone seems to know his first and second names. But anyway, these were composed by Zoroaster, the son of Arminius, a Pamphylian by birth, having died in battle and been in Hades. This Zoroaster fellow died in battle and went to Hades. I learned them of the gods, he says. This Zoroaster, Plato says, having been placed on the funeral pyre, rose again to life in 12 days. So when we talk about the deification of Zoroaster, people, even Plato, seems to say that the dude came back to life after living on a funeral pyre for 12 days. Well,
what is a funeral pyre?
Something having to do with a funeral where you lay a body. We know that much, don't we? All right, so here you have a resurrection story that is pre-Jesus. And the question is, did it really happen? Okay. A resurrection story. It ought to make us just a little bit leery. We should probably not get on board with this Zoroaster fellow, since no one knows anything about him historically. If you put that up next to the historical Jesus, we can at least nail down the century he lived in. For crying out loud, the calendar's based on him. Okay? And moreover, we don't wonder not only when he was alive, we also don't wonder where he lived. There's a lot of things about Jesus we don't wonder. But we're not surprised that they're talking about people coming back from the dead. Just be aware of that. False resurrections and that kind of thing. Then we talked a little bit. Now today we're going to talk about Avesta. Avesta. You're on page 358 of your textbook. And this is what the Avesta is. It is the sacred scripture of Zoroastrians. Avesta. Probably there are people out there that would help me with my pronunciation. Avesta. Or Avesta. Or whatever. It was originally written in a language known as Avestan. But of the original work, only a small fraction has survived, with a total size of about one-tenth that of the Bible. That's attractive. 1,189 chapters in the Bible, 32,000 verses. So all of a sudden, you have decided that you have a Bible, so to speak, a book, a holy book, that is one-tenth that size. 3,000 verses. That would not take long. That's much shorter than the Quran. Much, much shorter. All right, then we're going to talk down. Let's see here. Keep reading. The Avesta contains hymns, prayers, and ritual instruction. It's divided into three major sections, the oldest of which is called Yasna. Within that Yasna, there's a group of five hymns known as Gathas. Now, we heard about that in the video. You probably just don't remember. These are hymns about the god that Zoroaster says he worshipped. And we'll talk about him tomorrow. But the Gathas stress, next paragraph, the lordship of Ahura Mazda as the only supreme god, along with the exhortation to righteous living. So, five hymns known as the Gathas, and they speak about the lordship of Ahura Mazda, the only god, the only supreme god. Now, that's the first section. That's the first section of the Avesta. The second major section is called the Yashts, or the Yachts, however you want to say it. You just need to be able to spell it. Yashts. and contains hymns to various deities. So they believe in one supreme God, but other subordinate gods. One supreme God, other subordinate gods. The second major section is called the Yashts and contains hymns to various deities. The third section is known as the Videvadat. Videvadat, or Vindidad. Vindidad. It's a section written much later. All right, so what do I need you to know? I basically just need you to know about the section made up of the hymns, okay? If you can intelligently say, the Bible of the Zoroastrians has three sections, and one of the sections is made up of five hymns known as the Gathas, then you are, in my opinion, smarter than you were when you started this class, and that is good. If you can describe the scripture in that regard, you're good. Notice what the priests are called, bottom of that section. The priests of the Zoroastrians are called magi and use magic in their communion with God. So we know they're not monotheistic, but they'll tell you they are. Don't forget, this is very strange. It's like people today who say they believe the Bible but don't believe that Noah experienced a universal global flood. He said he experienced a local flood. And you say to them, well then why does Moses say that the water covered the whole earth in his account of the flood? And they'll say, because from his perspective, it looked like it was covering the whole earth, right? So, religions, to give the idea that you have a lot of agreement with them, will use terms that you have, that you use, but they'll use them within a particular context. So, if you were to ask a Zoroastrian, are you monotheistic? They would definitely say yes, absolutely. But what they mean is, they only believe in, because monotheistic means what?
One God.
One God. What they mean is one supreme God, many underling gods, right? So these priests work with magic with these underling gods. Yeah. In the book Good, Evil, Ancient Conceptions, edited by John Barry in the Lexham Bible Dictionary, here's what he says about this. The purpose of the evil spirits is to bring humanity to perdition by making each person walk the path of evil. Thus, the demons, or the lesser gods, lead the weakened persons to be lost because in their actions they have refused any dimension of goodness, rejecting the path of good. These two different dimensions of good and evil concurrently exist in the world. However, there is no symmetrical balance between the two powers. And we talked about how they believe there's one God and he contains both a positive and a negative, right? Confucianism would call it yin and yang, right? Each person, depending on their own conscience, needs to decide whether to follow the law of righteousness and goodness or the path of treachery and evil. Then later on in the same Lexham Bible Dictionary, exposure to Persian concepts during the exile likely influenced later Jewish thinking and writing about heaven and the afterlife. So think about what this guy is saying. He's saying the Zoroastrians obviously believe in heaven and hell because they believe in balance. Maybe not symmetry, which means one mirrors the other or it's totally obviously balanced, but they do believe that you have opposing ideas, even though they may not be quantifiably the same. In other words, if you have two cups of hot water, you need two cups of cold water, they'd say, no, you don't. It doesn't need to be balanced. But it doesn't need to be symmetrical, but it does need to have the balance in that if you have hot water, you must have cold water, even if the quantities are not the same. Well, this writer says that a lot of the Jews developed some of their views about the afterlife because they were taken into exile into Persia. Remember we said certain books of the Bible begin in Persia. One of them being Esther, another one being Nehemiah, near Persia, okay? Which is present-day what?
Iran,
yeah. And what other prophets spent time in Persia? Probably, or at least a Persian. What other prophets spent time in Persia, at least in Babylonia, which is near Persia, and was captured by the Persians?
Daniel
right. So we talk about being able to to count the stars, to be able to tell things from the stars. And then we talk about the wise men from the New Testament. Listen to what this author is saying. Persian concepts likely influenced later Jewish thinking and writing about heaven and the afterlife. The Iranian prophet Zoroaster taught that after death, the soul would be judged and condemned to hell or would be rewarded in a place in heaven. There emerged in Jewish thought, then, the hope for the reunion of Israel in the divine dwelling place. So here you have a guy writing in a Bible dictionary saying you can see a progression of Jewish understanding of heaven and hell, and most of that progression takes place as they come into contact with Zoroastrians. Wow. Well, if that's true, we have a lot to talk about. For one thing, we can't say anymore that Jewishness or the Jewish Old Testament is the only source for truth before Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We have to say, oh man, Zoroastrians had some stuff right to the point where the Jews are learning from them. Well, that's a good conversation to have. And if you wind up at Eastern Carolina or Appalachian State or any school of your choice, and you're going to read people that are liberal, and you're going to read people that if you don't think through this, your eyes will glaze over and you'll be like, I am not keeping up with you at all. But since you're hearing about it in high school, now all you have to think about is it true? And if so, how does that affect what I believe? There's a lot of people that are Facebook warriors, YouTube warriors, Google warriors, Wikipedia warriors. They really don't know anything, but they think they do because some dude made a 7-minute clip and talked into a camera one day late at night when he should have been in bed with his wife. You know? Should have been maybe doing work at his job, but instead he's doing a webcam video talking about the Jews influencing, or the Zoroastrians influencing Judaism. Now, we don't know that. I'm just trying to give you a flavor of today's experts. You'll be surprised how many people you go to school with next year if you continue on in college, and you're not a loser if you don't. Some people are not supposed to go to college. It's just that simple. You're going to find out that there are dreadfully few readers, even at college. Few. So, when they start a message board and they say ridiculous things like, you know, did you know that there is this God in Egypt who rose from the dead, and that was 300 years before Jesus, and Jesus was now, he's just a copycat religion. Christianity is just copycat religion. This God man who rose from the dead. That's, you know, you have to decide, is there anything to look into here? Am I afraid of facts? Because here, in a Bible dictionary, a man says that the Jews changed their views on the afterlife after they spent some time in Persia. Well, is that true? Did the Jews not believe in heaven and hell before their time in Persia? Now, what century BC did the Jews go into Persia?
Six.
So you're saying the 500s BC? Okay. Close enough, right? Babylonian captivity, first stage. Nebuchadnezzar comes to power, 605 BC. Flattens the city, 585, 586 BC. The Babylonians are trounced in the late 520s by Cyrus, king of Persia. One night, the Euphrates River used to go underneath the walls of Babylon, and one night the Persian army dammed the river. The Euphrates River dammed it. Not sent it to hell. D-A-M. Okay? Not D-A-M-N. All right? No. They dammed the Euphrates. Were you confused? They dammed the Euphrates River, and they went under the city wall on the riverbed. That's pretty smart. What kind of engineering prowess did they have to dam a river? That was really impressive. The Babylonians probably never thought anyone could do that, but an army did that, and that's how they took over Babylon. Went right under the city wall on the riverbed. So I'd love to know more about that. But the point I'm trying to make is now the Persians are in charge, and they're in charge. So the modern-day Iranians, are in charge of modern-day Iraq. Just like that. The Persians took over the Iraqi, the Babylonians. So just like that. Now, in 1980 to 1988, the Iranians and the Iraqis fought an 8-year war. It's pretty wild to think that, 500 plus 1900, over 2 millennia ago, they did the very same thing, and they were jostling between world empires. I'm not saying that ethnically Iraq is what Iraq was, any more than I'm saying ethnically today's Egyptians are what old Egyptians look like, because I honestly don't think they are. You have lots of civilizations that conquered one another and swapped out. But for the sake of our discussion today, the Jews are taken in captivity to Babylon in the 500s BC. They're influenced by the Persians. We can't argue that. We know that they were. The question is, before the 500s, after the 500s, is there a discernible progress in their understanding of heaven and hell? If so, this writer is right. This is a very thick book, this Lexham Bible Dictionary. And a lot of people never read this stuff and say, is that true? So the real question is, did the Jews believe that you went to heaven or hell after you died before they ran into the Zoroastrians? Because remember how this works. Zoroaster taught there's a heaven and a hell. Why? Because there's a good and an evil. You have to have that balance thing, right? So, what would you do if you were trying to answer that question? What would you do? You're trying to answer the question of, is there progress in their teaching? What would you do? Where would you look? Say again? Okay, you would look in the Old Testament for what? Okay, fair enough. So you would look Old Testament. All of the Old Testament? No, Old Testament or heaven and hell are mentioned. Okay, now, another question. What would be a great follow-on question to that, after you find those places?
Look at which ones happened before the captive leading after.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's exactly right. You find out where those books belong on that timeline, and find out whether or not all the mentionings of heaven and hell are after the Persian influence upon the Jewish nation. That's easy, isn't it? I mean, you think about it, that everyone in here could solve that riddle. So then now we need to decide what books of the Bible were written before the exile. Well, maybe it'd be easier to identify the ones that were written after the exile. All right, I'll give you the books. You tell me before or after. All right, here we go. Genesis through Deuteronomy.
Before.
Okay, yeah, written before the exile. Joshua.
Before.
Judges.
Before.
Ruth.
Before.
First and Second Samuel.
Before.
First and Second Kings.
Before.
Be careful. There are things that happen during the exile in Second Kings. So, after. First and Second Chronicles.
Before.
There are things in Second Chronicles that happen during the exile. So, after. So far, the only books that are written after the exile, or at least completed after the exile, are Kings, Chronicles, Ezra.
After.
Nehemiah.
After.
Esther.
After.
Job.
Before.
Psalms.
Or
some of them. Some of them are written after. Yeah. Okay, so far we have 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, and some of the Psalms that were written after. Proverbs.
Before.
Yeah, most of them were written by Solomon, right? So before. Song of Solomon. Ecclesiastes. Yeah, they're all written by Solomon. Lamentations?
Before.
Huh?
After. During? Before.
Yeah, probably during, since Jeremiah's talking about the Babylonian crushing of their city. And Jeremiah, let's see here. Psalms, probably Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. Isaiah. Let's talk about Isaiah.
During?
Yep, some of it was during. Isaiah. Jeremiah? During, Lamentations, during, Ezekiel, during, he writes it from Babylon, Daniel, from Babylon, during, Hosea. These are a little harder, aren't they?
After?
No. After Israel and before Judah. So, you know, remember, you had the Assyrian Empire, it came and got Israel, the northern 10 tribes in the 700s. So, some of these are after that and before Babylon, but since the Assyrians are not typically known as the Persians by that time, then we're safe. So, Hosea before, Joel before, Amos before, Obadiah after, during really, Obadiah, Jonah before, Micah before, Nahum before,
Habakkuk,
probably before, Zephaniah, Haggai and Zechariah occur after. Malachi, or the Italian prophet Malachi. Yeah. Yeah. Probably after. Okay, so we already know what books belong before, during, and after. So probably you want the ones that are during and after. Because if the captivity lasts 70 years, even if the Babylonians were not conquered by the Persians till the end of the Babylonian exile, then we're really looking for the books that were written or completed during the Persian reign. Okay, during the Persian reign, because they were not in power until the end of the 70 years of Babylonian captivity. So by the time we're done talking, we're really talking about post-exilic books. I didn't make that word up, honestly. Exile, post-exilic, okay? So after the exile, you're talking about, basically, Ezra, Nehemiah, okay? Ezra, Nehemiah. And then Esther. Esther certainly was written during a Persian king. So Ezra, Nehemiah come after the exile. Esther, during, okay? Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. And then in the minor prophets, basically Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Now, I could be off on one or two of those. Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Basically, all of those occur after the exile. So, out of the 39 Old Testament books, basically 7 books are post-exile. So, think this through. In order for you to prove what this guy is saying, you have to think through. Does Ezra talk about heaven and hell? Does Nehemiah talk about heaven and hell? Does Esther talk about heaven and hell? And let me save you some work. No, they don't. Okay, so if anything, the post-exile works after the influence of the Persians show a digression, not a progression. What's a digression in this context?
Going back.
Yeah, they should talk about it less. That's a digression. But this writer is saying there's a progression. You'll hear heaven and hell talked about more after the Persian influence. Well, I don't know about that, because it's not in Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi either, this place of hell or eternal bliss. So these are the ways that you have to think. Now look at this. You will never do this if you see Bible or whatever Bible classes you take in college, if any. You'll never see them as if it's the same as your technical math and your English comp and your statistics. You will never take this seriously. But if you do believe that all truth comes from God, then this is the most important thing, is for you to learn how to think critically about what you're hearing in the so-called religion classrooms. Because right here he made a statement. All right, so if it's true that these books that were written post-exile don't speak of an eternal heaven or an eternal hell, well, then all we've proven is that they don't speak about it at all after the Persian influence. And since he's not saying that they reduced the conviction of these things during their influence, then there's nothing to prove in that. Because then I would say, well, did they talk about it at all before the Persian influence? Right? And the answer is, yeah. Think about Genesis. Every time someone died in the book of Genesis, it says that they were gathered to their people. Well, it makes it sound like they believe in an afterlife. They were gathered to their people. Or David, when his son died that he had with Bathsheba, another man's wife, he said, I will not mourn anymore. I cannot go. He cannot come to me, but I will go to him. 2 Samuel 12. There's an apparent understanding that you will one day somehow be with your loved ones. And who said that? 2 Samuel, written maybe by Gad or Nathan or Samuel, part of it. But what's clear is that they did believe in it before they went into exile. You know, what about Korah? Remember what happened to him? Book of Numbers. It says that the earth opened up and he went down into the pit. Probably, I don't know to be true, but it looks like he's the only one that I've known that has fallen directly from this life into the next. Just like that, Book of Numbers. So there is no shortage at all of proof text. David said in Psalm 17, as for me, I will awake in your likeness. I will be satisfied when I awake in your likeness. David believed in a heaven. So what would you expect liberal Jews? Think about that discussion. What would you expect Reformed Jews, the most liberal kind? And we'll look at your quiz. I'm almost got them done. The most liberal kind of Jew is the Reformed Jew. What would you expect them to believe if they believed this? What would you expect them to believe about heaven and hell? First of all, where will you find most atheistic Jews? In the Orthodox, the Conservative, or the Reformed? Reformed. They're the most liberal. So what would you expect Reformed Jews to believe about heaven and hell?
Little or no hell, and heaven is...
Yeah, if there's any afterlife at all, it's some sort of heaven. Right. So, true story, and then I'm done. The Lord has a way of putting us in situations we would never pick for ourselves because they're good for us. And I was a chaplain of an army unit in Greensboro, which is about an hour and a half. Now that you have the pass, a bypass around Sanford, it's about an hour and a half to Greensboro. It used to be 2 hours easy because you had to go through Sanford, you know, stoplight. You know. So I was there for a while, and I was the only chaplain there for a year, which is the way it's supposed to be at a battalion. And I got an email one day from the head chaplain here at Fort Bragg saying, hey, we're going to send you a chaplain. It's a rabbi. All right. So, got Joe Christian, Bill Sturm. I mean, I'm pretty vocal about my faith there at that unit and preach Christ and the gospel. And I was kind to people of other religions like a chaplain ought to be. Helped them find ways to practice their religion as far as synagogue for the Jews, mosque for the Muslims, so on and so forth. It's a long story. But here's this rabbi, and I really didn't know there were three kinds of Jews. And this guy is saying wild stuff. We had a mock memorial ceremony. That doesn't mean you get around a dead body and make fun of it, okay? A mock memorial ceremony is a memorial ceremony that's not really happening. It's you're playing as if it is. And you do it so that you don't mess it up when you're doing a real one. It's a rehearsal, basically. Well, since there's another chaplain there, and my boss said, hey, try to work in the other chaplain with this idea. I said, yes, sir. And so I gave this rabbi the closing prayer. Gave him the closing prayer for the memorial ceremony. And he talked about how we look forward to being back together with you when we become one with you in the Garden of Eden again. So, I mean, you know, me being the peacemaker that I am, after the mock ceremony, I went up to him. I said, hey, I got a question for you. He said, yeah, what? What is it? I said, how do you know that person's going to the Garden of Eden? You know, of course, there is no dead person there. It was a rehearsal. But since he prayed this fictional prayer over a fictional dead person, I decided to ask him a real question. I said, how do you know this person went to the Garden of Eden? Well, that's just what we believe. Why? Why do you believe everyone goes to the Garden of Eden? Well, we don't believe everyone goes to the Garden of Eden. I said, well, let me ask you another question. Have you ever been in a funeral or a memorial service where the person certainly went to hell? Well, no, of course not. That's not for me to judge. I said, but wait a minute. You are judging. You decided that the person went to heaven. You decided the person went to the Garden of Eden. And all I'm asking is, what is the criteria to be sure that the person really is in the Garden of Eden? Basically, they're saying he's back in paradise, the Garden of Eden. He says, well, we just assume the best. I said, but wait a minute. You are promising everyone in attendance that if they die as well as that person died, they'll wake up in the Garden of Eden. Is that correct? Yes. If there's an afterlife, he said, we assume that we become one with God again. I said, so let me get this straight. We're not even individuals anymore. Now, what does this sound like? Hinduism, and it's underlying what came out of Hinduism?
Buddhism,
yeah. So we become part of the eternal force once again. I'm talking about Jews believe that, but not Orthodox Jews. Very, very liberal Jews. Whatever there is of the afterlife, it's love, and we're one with God again, right? So all I'm trying to get you to do is think through these things. And look, if you'll take the pressure off of yourself of having to win an argument in your first discussion, you'll be just fine. Nothing hurts about looking at the person and saying, I can see you know what you're talking about, and I'm having a hard time keeping up with you. So if we could keep this thing just on one point, I'll do some more thinking, and I'll get back with you. Because you obviously know your stuff. That doesn't hurt. You didn't hurt anything by saying that. But if you become frustrated, disappointed in yourself, and angry because you just don't know what you're talking about, then you're going to do more harm to the work of Christ. But if you look at someone and say, let me give that some thought. Why do you think that? Why do you say that? I'm interested. I'm not here to fight with you. Most people, when you ask them seeking questions, they assume what? Maybe they think you're interested, but probably they think you're ready to pick a fight. Right? So all I'm saying is we can be a little bit skillful about how we approach these things. We're reading sources that say amazing things, and you won't be your last. All right, so tomorrow we're going to talk about Ahura Mazda, the one true supreme God. Any questions?